Unanswered questions about the plant are all trivial. What they should be worried about is whether the thing will work and whether it will do it safely, he said. Ford said the scientist group, many of whose members are professors at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, which is thought to be a front for the CIA, by the way, acted on its own in studying the Philippine and other Asian nuclear plants when recommending that Westinghouse take sole responsibility for the controlled operation of the Philippine nuclear plant, whose design and the beginning process of building had begun by Westinghouse, a multinational corporation that's been involved in the simple cloak and dagger technique tricks murder all over the world. In South Africa, Westinghouse is strong, in Chile also. Well, let's hope that this breach, this is good foreign policy on the part of the Soviet Union to try to even move in to an area like the Philippines, where a rightist has been in control, a very far rightist at that. No use to try to color that, one who's dealt with his enemies in a most repressive fashion. But Mrs. Marcos obviously has some flair for being different, to call her favorite heroes of this time, of our era, Mao and Lenin. It contended that Westinghouse, whose domestic nuclear reactor sales in the USA had dramatically declined over the last 4 years, is apparently trying to sell to developing countries defective technology. That is the reason that the Philippines have turned against him, that it can no longer market successfully at home, and the Philippine government has seen that they were building a reactor that was unsafe for the Philippine people. Now, isn't that nice? The multinational corporation Westinghouse was preparing to build a nuclear reactor near a fault, near a volcano, that had already been proven in the U.S. to be unsafe and not allowed to be built. The report questioned Westinghouse's assertion that the plant being built near a fault line is designed to withstand shocks from earthquakes without springing potentially deadly leaks that would have killed literally tens of thousands of Philippine people. Westinghouse's principal contract is for $320 million. More than $644 million of the plant's cost is being financed by the U.S. Export-Import Bank. Mrs. Marcos said the Soviet Union offered to finance their plant with loans at 2% interest. This is a much more attractive offer. Officials said this would be much lower than the Export-Import Bank's rates, which have not been disclosed. Also, the Soviet Union promised a safely built nuclear reactor in a safely built position and would begin the design from the ground up. Representative Clarence Long, Democrat Mellon, chairman of the House Subcommittee on Foreign Operations, has asked that export licenses for the Westinghouse reactor be withheld until possible conflict of interest on the part of Dissini can be investigated and further study can be made of the project's economic, environmental, and engineering aspects, as well as to whether it is in the security interest of the United States, in that Mrs. Marcos, Imelda Marcos, is showing such courtship to the Soviet Union. Well, let us hope. The last time this happened, when Mrs. Mao Zedong attempted to succeed her husband, when he was ailing and dying, she was arrested by the Chinese people, renegade government, a government that is more pro USA than many capitalist governments these days in foreign policy, even though its domestic policies have been good. The only breakthrough this week was that the Prime Minister Wei of China did travel to the People's Democratic Republic of North Korea, the communist government there, and state unequivocally that USA should withdraw its forces, its troops that it has refused to withdraw, and furthermore, he said that reunification of North Korea would be a demand of China's foreign policy, and they would continue to make that demand. These are contradictions, and they're very hard. Some political scientists amongst us, we always welcome your opinion on such matters. Fidel Castro said over Radio Cuba last night that China is a socialist country, that its foreign policy is indeed pro-U.S., and has been indeed a renegade to U.S. imperialism, but he said this is changing. He said he has it on sure word that there are changes taking place within the Chinese government that will bring it back into line with international communism, Marxist-Leninism, of the Warsaw Pact headed by the Soviet Union. Let's hope that Dr. Castro's not just posturing, which would be justified to propagate goodwill, the end justifies the means, try to propagate unity and strength, but I doubt that it would be in his interest to make such a statement if he didn't have some basis of fact. Let's hope that China's position on North Korea represents some change. Minneapolis, Minnesota, the 18th city to turn down gay rights. The city's four-year-old protection of gay rights was repealed yesterday by a 3-to-1 margin in the first major test since residents of Dade County, Florida, threw out a similar ordinance last June, and Portland, Oregon, followed by Seattle. After the results were announced, Major George Latimi begged gays please not to flee the city. Please stay in Minneapolis and St. Paul. St. Paul outlawed gay rights only just 2 weeks ago. Latimer urged at a rally, as long as I'm mayor, each of you will be treated as a human being, which is what you are. Well, it's very nice of the mayor to admit that homosexuals are human beings. The turnout for an off-year election was high, almost 55%. Unofficial vote totals were 54,096 in favor of repealing a section of an ordinance which prohibits discrimination in housing, jobs, education, and accommodations, which also doesn't just necessarily affect those of homosexual background, but can affect other minorities. Whereas the vote in favor of them was only 20,000, less than 20,000. A Temple Baptist church where 200 supporters of the initiative gathered, shouts of hallelujah and praise the Lord greeted announcements of vote goals. As the right-wing turn in America is reaching a frightening degree, according to this news commentator writing in the Chicago Tribune. The Reverend Richard Angwin, who spearheaded the repeal as leader of Citizens Alert for Morality, said at the church that the vote means that Minneapolis and St. Paul queers will have to keep their sins quiet. We don't want to see them around our town. Some 2,000 gay rights activists marched through downtown Minneapolis after the repeal. Marchers tossed yellow carnations and daisies on the steps of City Hall, that's probably a Freudian slip, to mark what they call the death of human rights for gays there. Greg Anderson, spokesperson for Minneapolis Citizens for Human Rights, which opposed repeal, told a cheering rally held before the march that now St. Paul and Minneapolis gays would continue to fight for their rights, though the prospects for non-discrimination of gays look dim throughout the United States. Some gay spokespersons were talking about moving to other parts of the world. When the hell that would be, I don't know, because not very many places favorable to gay rights. Both sides spent tens of thousands of dollars in their campaigns for and against the repeal revolution. The resolution. Fact of the matter, Guyana has one of the most fair attitudes along those lines of live and let live policy, which you can't realize how important and how grateful we should be for our community here, which we can be self-governing without interference. Singer Anita Bryant, Pentecostal, who is a millionaire from success with being the orange, the seller of orange juice. She's always a little gal that comes on and sells orange juice. They're in a lot of financial trouble though, because she's been sued for slander. And it looks like it may win. She's also been reportedly operated for cancer. So even these tyrants do have their pains too. She helped lead last year's successful campaigns to repeal the Dade County, Florida gay rights ordinance, also in Portland, Oregon, and in Seattle, and in St. Paul and Minneapolis. In a statement last night, Ms. Bryant said St. Paul's vote was a victory for the morally Christian committed majority. That's wonderful. Picture shows gays crying in the streets down on their knees. It's hardly because it won't do you any good to be on your knees. Environmentalists turn on Carter. Consumer and environmental leaders saying that they can no longer blame everybody but Jimmy Carter for energy policies they found dismaying have now placed the blame on Carter for abandoning his campaign promises. For all of us who were concerned about nuclear power, candidate Carter offered an incredible opportunity, said Anthony Weissman of the Natural Resources Defense Council. He opined the phrase, nuclear power as a last resort. He pledged to minimize our dependence on it and guarantee that those energy sources which are most desirable would be pushed. He lied. The post-election reality was different, Weissman said. He focused special criticism on Carter's proposal to speed up atomic plant construction and licensing while reducing the opportunity for public opposition to nuclear power. It is, in our judgment, a major departure by the President and his energy people from promises made during the campaign and even since then, Weissman said. A coalition of 12 major groups issued a statement yesterday accusing Carter of lying and turning from his campaign pledges to support solar energy and conservation while reducing emphasis on the atom that was going to become a danger factor to the health of the United States citizens. The coalition said Carter has proposed cutting federal spending on solar power and still has no permanent energy department officials in charge of conservation, which he promised to do before elected. Many of us feel betrayed. Lewis Dunlap of the Environmental Policy Center said many people feel double-crossed. Many people have spent the last year blaming everybody but Carter. It is time that he is held accountable for this sin, for his hypocrisy. Atomic test zone in swamps. Pentagon lines. More than 2,800 veterans of the country's atomic testing programs and their relatives have inundated toll-free telephone lines in the past 5 days to report their experiences to the Defense Department. The calls have been in response to a crash program to track down more of the 500,000 estimated military personnel and civilians who participated in the Nevada and South Pacific nuclear testing programs, which may have resulted in them being damaged for life. The Defense Nuclear Agency, which is coordinating the program, has recorded 2,800 calls by midday yesterday on a toll-free line set up specifically for it. An agency spokesman said that during the first day in operation, the line carried 500 calls in 8 hours. To handle the deluge, the spokesman said the DNA has since added four lines and opened them around the clock to make it easier for callers to get through to an interviewer. The program was started in response to criticism from the House Commerce Subcommittee on Health and Environment, which is holding hearings on the long-term effects of radiation exposure to these 500,000 military and civilian people in the United States that were forced to go through the Nevada and South Pacific nuclear testing programs, even many of them pushed as far up to the line as possible by the Pentagon, the armed forces. That subcommittee, headed by Representative Paul Rogers, found that although 500,000 persons have been exposed to harmful doses of radioactivity from those tests, there have been no effort to monitor participants for subsequent health effects. Not one program in the entire United States to follow up on these people that were exposed to harmful doses of radioactivity. Note, 500,000 U.S. civilians and military people were still exposed. Moreover, records of participants are either sketchy or non-existent entirely. Military officials admit many of those service records were lost when a fire swept the Army's Record Center in St. Louis in 1972. Some say this was a CIA maneuver, so there would be nothing to show the evidence of the inhumanity of the U.S. military in the fact that it exposed 500,000, 500,000 U.S. citizens to dangerous levels of radiation, dangerous levels of radioactivity. Well, not to be any surprise, the U.S. has no concern for its own people. Not black or white. Not to be surprised. A growing concern, the rise in child suicides. Last week, a high school girl in San Carlos wrote a short and poignant note. I love you, Mom. Note to her mother. Then, in the privacy of her bedroom, she put a 45 caliber pistol to her temple and pulled the trigger. She was only 16. A few weeks earlier, a 14-year-old Redwood City boy set 5 fires in his apartment. He got on his bicycle and pedaled to a nearby 3-story apartment building, climbed onto the roof, and flung himself to the driveway. 15-year-old San Francisco boy, depressed over a black eye beating he took in a schoolyard fight, couldn't face up to his injured ego. He sat in his mother's idling car and smoked a marijuana cigarette until carbon monoxide filled the family garage and forever blotted out his memory. Bay Area coroners and private organizations throughout the San Francisco area report a noticeable increase in number of adolescent suicides in the last few months, part of a national rise that is of increasing concern for mental health experts. Suicides of the teens have increased 10 times since 1973. There are 10 times more suicides in USA of teenagers than there was in 1973. In addition, said child psychiatrists and clinics, their offices are overflowing with emotionally distressed children who are suicidal. We have a waiting list of children in our adolescent day treatment and tutorial counseling programs, said Bill Cunningham, a social worker in San Francisco's Sunset Mental Health Center. We're serving 24, but we could be serving twice that many. We should be reminding them in our press releases. Someone should remind Terry, who's very busy in the radio room, that we should notify them that we have no suicides while San Francisco is going crazy with suicides and people are waiting in line, unable to be treated. There are not enough treatment programs and counseling programs for the suicidal. Our children are leading healthy, productive lives, producing with joy, perspective, and goals in mind. Says we're serving 24, but we could be serving twice that many, said psychiatric nurse Judy Dolan, who runs a program in San Francisco General Hospital under contract to the city. The youngest ones we're seeing is 12 years of age. Even grade school kids are not immune from suicide, which is the third leading cause of youthful deaths now, after homicide and accidents only. In San Leandro, on August 29, 11-year-old elementary school boy fashioned a noose from a belt and hanged himself from a bathroom shower. All these are white children, too, that have been mentioned so far, from coming from good backgrounds. So capitalism does not make happiness. Both parents working, trying to make a name for themselves to keep up a standard of living. Their children are miserable hell to such a degree that they would fashion a noose from a belt and hang himself from a bathroom shower bar after being given some reprimand for not completing his homework. A 12-year-old boy who had been warned repeatedly not to play with a family 22 caliber pistol shot himself in the back outside the Union City home on July 20. But because of the pain, it was not mortal. The first time, he then shot himself in the head. A Newark boy also hanged himself with a garage rafter from a garage rafter last month. He was depressed because of week-long restriction due to disciplinary action for school infraction. He was only 13. According to the National Center for Health Statistics in Washington, D.C., there were 1,170 suicides of children from ages 10 to 14 last year, the latest year for which data is available. No, it's 1976. And some of these, 260 of these deaths, occurred in California. Traditionally, a national leader in suicides, according to the State Health Department, is California. The number also rose for the 15 to 19-year-old bracket. There were 1,711 such California suicides in 1975. The problem definitely has Bay Area experts worried. Only lightly populated Marin County, with one death of a 20-year-old man last year, failed to show a significant increase in suicides of persons 10 to 20 years. I would mention just that there have been an increasing amount of suicides in the area, and here we have not one. Of course, we realize from the great extensive study of the office that there's only one way that one can give their life, that's in a revolutionary effort Because suicide, selfish suicide, always leaves one to come back. As I gave you scientific proof of hypnotherapy clinicians and doctors that were doing studies and analysis this very past week. The weekend I gave it to you, the names, how even illnesses were carried over from past lives. Contra Costa County had 5 such deaths. San Francisco had 18, up from 8 the previous year. San Mateo County reported 10 suicides, up from 5 last year. And Alameda County had 15 deaths, with the youngest, the 11-year-old hanging victim. It's really amazing, said Ronald Prowl, Alameda County's chief deputy coroner. You wonder why these things are happening. What's causing this when you get down to 11, 12, and 13 years of age? Mental health experts say many children commit suicide for some of the same reasons adults do. Unrequited love. The despondency over a loved one's death. Fear of punishment and pressure to perform well. As you might point out, as a capitalist characteristic, such as getting straight A's in school. Competition, in other words, instead of cooperation. They are usually really silly things, said San Francisco Chief Coroner Boyd Stevens, citing the death of a youth who suffered the black eye. It's such a minor thing, and it couldn't be that important, but to the person it is. Dr. Martin Glasser, child psychiatrist and pediatrics consultant to San Francisco General Hospital, agreed. It may seem irrational to everyone except a kid. Well, it's not so irrational. People make fun of you for all sorts of things. You have to maintain an image of being tough, strong, the best. You've got to make the best grade. You've got to be the best looking. They're just not being factual. They don't want to admit the errors of capitalism. It's capitalism that creates this kind of terrible pressure on children to live up to other people's standards. Glasser said that it's fairly common starting to have thoughts of using your life as a vehicle of expression. At that age, he said, teenagers are losing their basic foundation from mom and dad out to society, and they have normal development depressions. Some overcome it. Children 10 to 14 years are still in a strong family support system, Glasser said, and suicides at that age are the result of a very unusually sick child with a lot of other problems. A very sick society. They never talk about the sick society that creates the sick children. Glasser and many other experts believe that suicide rate is actually higher than the figures show. Many are listed as accidents because coroners fail to comprehend the true cause of death or don't state it out of deference to surviving family members. Also, it's done by the press, as we know from John Harris. They don't want to admit how many murders. They don't want to admit how many people don't like U.S. life. They don't want to admit the dangers of it, the pressures of it, so they just won't admit in the press how many suicides there are. Hazel Levitt, a San Francisco Suicide Prevention Center consultant, said there's a lot of pressure among young people. Parental pressure to get straight A's. That's capitalism, you see. Pressure to compete. Peer pressure for drugs. Got to get everything depends upon the competition between those around you. Levitt said, and competition is capitalism. In its vicious form, it takes the form of monopoly capitalism. Levitt said child depression is significantly more rife in one-parent homes. Every kid I ever talked to had a bad encounter, had a broken home, she said. So the broken home is number one on my list. Here in the collective, we have no broken homes. We are one family. We all have many aunts and uncles. We have many brothers and sisters. We have one father and mother, for sure. Father and Mother Jones, and then all the other supervisors that love the children. How much love they have. They're loved on so many levels, and that's why you should all take time to stroke them, pat them, speak to them when they go by, instead of being caught up in your self-centeredness, as some are. Always be smiling. That's one rule in this camp, this entire lovely community. We should smile and we should speak. It is a law, and we have forgotten that law, and I'm reminding you that that law will be enforced in people's rally tonight at 7:30. There will also be a test on news tonight, so be sure. You don't know which one will be tested. There always will be a test on news each night. Anyone failing will go to the extra class. That class will begin the end of this week, the extra class. How many traffic accidents of adolescents that every hospital sees are really suicide attempts? It is suspected that 90%, Glasser asks. These involve leading their lives up to fate by running stop signs, riding motorbikes while high on alcohol or drugs, or popping down a steep hill at 80 miles per hour, or 60 miles an hour on a skateboard. purposely running into another car on another lane. These are never reported as suicides. If they were, said the suicide rate of America's youth, even down to 10, 12 years of age, would be astronomical. That means way beyond anything mathematically calculated or understandable. Capitalism does not bring happiness. This shows that America's white youth killed themselves, knew all these things in the most horrible ways. It goes on, the article goes on to tell how the people do it in the most horrid ways. In adolescence, look at the antisocial acts, such as robbing a store, getting caught and shot, or the drug abuse, he said. In all these areas, how much is curiosity or adolescent suicide attempts? Stevens, whose office is one of the areas most aggressive pinpointing the reasons for death, is not convinced that the accident suicide rate is ever brought in as it ought to be and considered as suicide, which it is nearly always. One of the things that can look like suicide is sexual asphyxia, Stevens said. That is a term used to describe sexual gratification received through controlled strangulation. We had a young boy die of that. We get 2 or 3 a year, he said. If you don't know enough about it, it's called suicide rather than being called an accident. Sadism, masochism. My God, America's society is sick. Sick. No society on earth is so sick as this. Trying to find sexual satisfaction from sexual asphyxia, strangulation. They even got now a psychological term for it. Stevens also cites the example of teenagers who on dare drink bottle of liquor. Is that suicide? Of course. I think most parents as a whole do not want to recognize it. Parents don't want to look at it, Levitt said. They say, my God, my kid can't feel this way. This is America, wonderful country. 2 weeks ago, Levitt said the Suicide Prevention Center talked a 12-year-old boy out of jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. He had been a troubled child since he was 6, and this boy said he gave out all kinds of clues. His father said, oh, come on, you'll grow out of it. Yeah, easy to say. That's all he would ever get, the 12-year-old child said. Glazer warned adults to take everything that someone says at face value initially. When a child says, oh, I feel like killing myself, and later says, I was just kidding, pursue it, get an evaluation, he said. It's important to let those kids know you're listening, and we want to be sure we're doing that in the schools. That's why we have community meetings. We want the children to participate. We welcome them in the town forum to participate, to mention news, to ask questions. They're so beautiful when they ask questions about our agricultural program. We want them to do it in steering. That's beautiful. They can talk about their problems. Teachers make it easy for them to talk about their problems. Adolescent depression often can be hidden by temper tantrums, boredom, restlessness, defiance, according to Dr. David Schaefer, Columbia Presbyterian Psychiatric Institute, New York. And the warning sign may be as oblique as a child saying that no one cares if he lived or died. A lot of adolescents think of death not as a theology, but as a fantasy. Although there's a theological movement going in the United States that glorifies suicide. I don't know why they should then wonder so much about us when we say that for revolutionary deeds we would lay down our lives rather than be taken prisoner or subjected to the fascist system of monopoly capitalism and racism in USA. They don't have a concept of death per se. They think of death as a metaphor and do not necessarily desire the reality. Ask, for example, what would happen if he died. A child might answer, Mom will get angry, Glazer said. As children become older, they learn that death is not reversible, according to Schaefer, who has conducted psychological postmortem studies of children's suicides. Children do not develop mature ideas about death in United States society until they're of age, mature years. Hell, that's where you're wrong. Children should be confronted with the realities of life and a purpose for living and a purpose for dying, which is, and only can be, socialism, Marxist-Leninism, communism. Then children will not behave so immaturely and will not feel the pressures of stupid competition, because we will not allow a child to be singled out, made fun of because of race, because of color, because of some physical difference. We will not allow that, and we demand that that continue. There will be no fun made of anyone, no fun made of anyone's particular physical disabilities or any differences that they may have. We do not allow jokes being made upon people. This is not tolerated. If you want to make a joke, it must not be a That's capitalism. The desire to cut down people cruelly, as is done even by some people in leadership, give cutting remarks at all times. We should be cordial. We should be quick to disagree, because only in self-criticism and group criticism comes growth. But we absolutely demand, that you give your criticism in love. Give your criticism in courtesy. If you don't feel the love, you can be courteous and think about the other person. There's not enough done about that, even amongst leadership, and I demand that be changed. Ex-CIA agent faces suit over book. Attorney General Griffith Bell, known racist, former member of the Ku Klux Klan, who heads all the law enforcement of the United States, said yesterday the Department of Justice is preparing to file a suit against former Central Intelligence Agency, CIA employee, who penned a book about his experiences with the agency before publication. The Attorney General told a news conference here that the government is going to seek damages and perhaps an injunction against Frank W. Snepp III, a former senior analyst for the CIA whose recent interview describes intelligence activity during the Vietnam War. One of his books has already been stopped from being produced. That's freedom. They talk about freedom USA. There is no freedom of speech. Only freedom of speech within the confines of what the press wishes to allow it. Such a lawsuit would represent the first time that the Justice Department has invited a full legal test of the contract that all CIA employees may not submit anything they write after leaving unless it is for pre-publication censorship by the CIA itself. If that contract isn't valid, he and everyone ought to know it, Bell said. If it is valid, then we think it ought to be enforced. There's something wrong with the system when people can back down on their contracts at will. Well, he was upheld. The Attorney General is in New Orleans for the annual meeting of the American Bar Association, and since that time, since this article, he was upheld by the court. The agent was fined. The agent was charged with damages because it was decided that no CIA agent can write anything without the approval of the CIA itself. That's the new pattern of events, U.S. style, 1978. Well, I see. Good news that we have been written about in the World Council of Churches magazine again. That's good news. A very kindly article of praise saying that, in essence, People's Temple does more for humanity than any church group known anywhere. That's quite a praise. Let us hope we can live up to it and deserve that caption of praise. Yes, the magazine One World. It goes all around the world as, again, praises. They praise us in the March issue, and now they praise us in the May issue as being, as I said, the most active church for helping human beings of any church known. I don't know why we're faring that well with the World Council of Churches, but it seems, in looking at their writing, that they are undoubtedly on a socialist course and probably don't get too much encouragement in their socialist position. So we're grateful, at least, that we find somebody somewhere that is willing to tell the truth about People's Temple, that we indeed do more for humanity than anybody else. There's no question about that, although we are a socialist movement, and the church was only the position we took, that we had to take, anybody with the right mind would know, was essential to take to achieve the results that we needed for the working class. By following that example, and following that position, we were able to free a lot of people. If indeed we had not taken that position, a lot of folk would never have known the freedom that they now know today. I was trying to find the exact text of the book. I don't seem to find it this moment, but I will get it for you at a later time so that you can stand by, hold the tape. Hold the tape where it is at this moment. Hold the tape. Records. In May, the One World, monthly magazine, the World Council of Churches, all the churches of the world, comes from Geneva, Switzerland. Diana praised as the most outstanding program to help humanity in the world, People's Temple Agriculture Mission in Guyana. More than any other group in America, the People's Temple has lived the principles of early Christianity. The comment is typical of the enthusiasm shown for the project in Guyana of the People's Temple Agricultural Mission. It's in bold headlines. Guyana Project praised. Guyana Group finds a new lease on life. Said I was just reading over the copy of the September issue of One World, enjoying the articles submitted from various confessing communities. This is the one in March. In different parts of the world, I thought that I would share with you some news of a very unique community which has been developed here in Guyana by Reverend Jim Jones, 1,000 some members of the large church. People's Temple Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, who have moved here from the United States. People's Temple is one of the most socially active ministries in America. We are very proud of what has been accomplished in Guyana over the past 3 years. People's Temple is a strongly socialistic church, emulating the ideals of communal sharing of the early Christians, Acts 2:44-46. Reverend Jim Jones has been heard by tens of thousands of people and has fearlessly witnessed to the gospel of liberation in his own life, which has been a ceaseless struggle against tremendous opposition and persecution. In 1973, the large San Francisco headquarters of People's Temple was struck by an arsonist and gutted. There have been attempts on Reverend Jones's life many times, and the catalog of harassment and maliciousness against him and his immediate family, which includes 7 adopted children of different races, as well as his church's extended family, is a grim testimony to the persistence of vicious religious and political persecution in the United States of America. The Jonestown community in Guyana is an amalgam of races and ages, including over 250 senior citizens. The oldest is 108, most of whom were ghetto dwellers in the United States. In Guyana, they are finding a new lease on life, a peaceful, wholesome environment, free from the tensions bred by American cities and the evils of racism. Former drug addicts, sociopaths, hustlers, and despondent youth who couldn't see any future for themselves have been transformed in this environment, in this extraordinary community of love, sharing and cooperation. This, for us, is the heart of Christ's teachings, a way of life where all that believe are together and have all things common, socialism, participating in a new society where selfishness, greed, and exploitation are overcome. Since its founding 25 years ago in Indiana by Reverend Jim Jones, People's Temple has stressed completely total racial equality, extending vital social services to needy and desperate persons. We believe that socialism, cooperativism, communalism, whatever you may call it, points the way to a future for mankind, a way of life that transcends mere dogma, doctrine, and empty theory and theological abstractions, as well as empty Sunday morning pieties. That was written by Professor Trump in large, bold headlines in the March issue. It's amazing we're getting covered twice. And it said in the May issue that I just read before that, part of it, that we had only sent 25 letters. Professor Trump, for God's sakes, let's see that we get everybody in here writing letters, and let us see tonight that all, for Christ's sakes, all the people in San Francisco write letters so we can continue that good tie with One World. It goes to all the churches of the world. It's headquartered out of Geneva, Switzerland, in English and in all languages. Catholic, Protestants, every church belongs to the World Council, and this magazine goes to every denomination and every religion of the world, all over the world. So we're grateful for that breakthrough. Whatever, we continue on, whether we get praised or damned. We are standing for what is right. That's what's important, the rightness of communism. We shall move on with news about Namibia. South African troops. While its war of liberation with South Africa continues, in the north and central regions of Namibia, the Southwest African People's Organization, SWAPO, is bracing for a new round of talks with the 5 Western nations that have been actively urging a settlement for Namibian independence since last spring. Talks are now expected to begin again, according to SWAPO representatives at the United Nations. The 5 Western nations, the U.S., Britain, France, West Germany, and Canada, have apparently been meeting in New York since late in December in preparation for meetings among themselves. South African representatives and SWAPO leaders' talks were originally proposed for early in January, but both SWAPO and South Africa have alternately requested postponements. Now, as you know, the military had completely invaded. The U.S. was getting nervous and was trying to bring about a settlement in Namibia, Southwest Africa, on your map, that would have been suitable to capitalist interest and not Marxist interest. But it appears that the special multinational corporations and the right-wing leaders of U.S. government hold more sway than even Carter, because an invasion has taken place in the entirety of Namibia, and the resistance is rising, increasingly rising, against the invasion by SWAPO. SWAPO reportedly today killed 19 of Pretoria's government representatives. Pretoria is the capital of the government of the Union of South Africa. Officials connected with the U.S. mission to the United States and the United Nations have reportedly stated they have managed to reach workable compromises before between SWAPO and Pretoria on 11 of 19 bargaining points. But as in other Western diplomatic efforts, such percentages may be misleading. There are some points on which neither SWAPO nor South Africa appear prepared to budge an inch from their long-standing positions. It appears that the Union of South Africa was not even prepared to keep their word. They promised independence in Namibia, but they counted on getting it with puppet leader that Union of South Africa's dictatorship had put in power. However, they got a surprise to life when the two puppet leaders were assassinated by the people. Now, this place is going to be...
Oh! Sunday morning.